This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
But in the meantime, we're taking a look at North Asia today, and we have a special guest in studio with us, our regular Market Watch commentator, Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist of COFAS, the credit insurance company. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
Thanks for having me on the show today.
So we're going to spend this quarter looking at how North Asian economies have been affected by the US-China trade war, as well as what's in store for them in 2020. And let's start with the biggest powerhouse here, China. Now, what is the state of the Chinese economy and how impacted has it been by the US-China trade war thus far?
So there's various factors that are playing a role in China's economic deceleration. But of course, we did see a slightly weaker GDP outturn for the third quarter last week at 6%. And that weakness is expected to translate into sub 6%, which of course is that psychological level that all investors are watching next year. So we are solidly looking at growth below 6% next year. And the trade war is having an effect. There are direct and indirect effects. In our opinion, the direct effect through trade channels has been around 0.6% of GDP. This is just the amount of GDP lost as a result of the tariffs. And in case we do go ahead with that planned December 15 tariff, going into 2020, that could be almost up to 1% of GDP, which is not the worst. It's manageable given the right policy response, and we have seen that. But it is quite meaningful in an economy where everything is so planned and growth targets are a particularly important political objective. Now, indirectly, it has been a little bit more significant, especially going into next year. We do expect this indirect impact through the sentiment channel to be more pronounced because we are not anywhere near a resolution. And that if you have tariffs on all of your products, psychologically, it's going to be a much stronger impact on domestic consumption and investment than the current scenario where people are still waiting and hoping for some sort of deal to come through. So next year, potentially through indirect channels, it could be more significant than it has been this year. But so far, we're looking at around 1% of GDP.
But Carlos, if we just drill down in terms of the Chinese economic slowdown, right, how much of it is actually due to their own domestic issues? Because they have tried to curb the use of debt to fund growth, right? Because that number actually has been much higher than people had originally anticipated, debt to GDP.
Correct. So there's a cyclical and a structural story here. The trade war is, of course, a big cyclical headwind to the Chinese economy. And they have had to implement policies in order to address that cyclical downside. So we've seen targeted monetary policy easing. We will continue to see targeted monetary policy easing. But the Chinese economy is also slowing on a structural basis. And that is because they need to move away from an unsustainable model of excessive debt growth and investment towards a more sustainable consumption-driven economy. Now, they do have to do more to ease because we have seen retail sales slowing. What we would like to see is investments slowing and retail sales increasing. But by no means will policy easing be able to take care of this deceleration. And that is the reason why they haven't necessarily done a lot of monetary policy easing or fiscal easing, because they want to control credit growth. Credit growth, if you look at the outstanding credit growth figures, has actually been flat despite everything that's happening on the trade front. So that is a good signal that they need to continue to control this debt bubble if they want to grow sustainably in the future.
But will other initiatives like the Belt and Road Initiative actually help to improve the longer term outlook of China then?
Yes. So one of the things that they are considering is they have a debt problem. It's unlikely that it will be a very smooth transition or a very easy problem to resolve. So they have to do other things to try to boost that potential growth rate in the future. Now, by linking up other markets, they are creating export markets effectively for Chinese goods, which should, of course, support the old school or the traditional exporting heavy industry sectors for future years to come. However, in the context of the sort of slowdown and the conditions that we have now, it's likely that Belt and Road might take a more secondary sort of position in the priorities of the policymakers, which means that the development will be a little bit slower than previously expected. So it will help, but it won't be like the panacea for growth in China.
And turning our attention also to Hong Kong this morning, where you're based out of, Carlos, is the city-state at risk of losing its crown as an Asian financial hub as well as a gateway to China, considering the ongoing protests that we've been seeing?
So I don't think so. For one key reason, Hong Kong is still a very important gateway for China. But the protests are going to have a significant and a long-term impact on the city's reputation. So Hong Kong is a traditional foreign direct investment vehicle for China. So 60% of China's outbound foreign direct investment flows via Hong Kong. Of course, a lot of these Chinese companies that are restructuring debt have to move away from loans and towards more finance-driven sources of financing like bonds and equities. And they do this via Hong Kong. It's a main sort of issuance hub for that kind of product, financial product. And it's also one of the main IPO centers in the world. And we've seen this with Alibaba now. So it will continue to play a significant role. But yes, the protests are having a big impact on the reputation of the city. There were some shifts in personnel that were taking place already as, you know, ASEAN is picking up and China is becoming more domestically focused. So you had investors looking at Singapore and other parts of Southeast Asia as a main sort of regional hub. So all of those shifts have been accelerated by potentially the protests. And then on the economy front, it is going to have a pretty negative impact. So we are looking at minus 0.6% growth this year. So negative growth this year because...
What about next year? How bad are things going to get?
Exactly. So fourth quarter, we continue to see a lot of weakness. And going into the first half of next year, we will for sure continue to see negative growth. Perhaps in the second half, this might ameliorate slightly, but we are still looking at sub 1% growth, around 0.5% for 2020. And that is down from a previous forecast of 1.5%. So this significant weakness that's the result of lower retail sales because people just don't have the time or the ability to go into the center and consume over the weekends because of the protests.
And now taking a look also at other areas of North Asia, Japan. Now, Japan is likely to announce its third quarter growth numbers later this week. What are your expectations here? Now, indications are that it will be in the region of less than 1% growth. And if that's the case, is that why Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is asking the government to prepare a stimulus package, the first since 2016?
So yes, we do expect GDP to come in around 0.8%. But that is not reflecting some of the downside that we will see in the economy in coming months, which is really what Prime Minister Abe is hinting at. So earlier this year, we said that there were three economies in Asia that might face a recession in 2020. And those were Hong Kong, which is already in a technical recession, Singapore, which managed to avert a technical recession very narrowly in the third quarter, expanding by 0.1%, and Japan. So Japan implemented a sales tax hike, which is important if they want to manage their debt burden. But in previous instances, it has translated into a lot of weakness in the activity because consumption is such a huge part of their economy. So going forwards, they've done things to ameliorate this decline, but we do think that Q3 figures are not reflecting the deterioration in consumption that will take place as a result of the tax. They will show in the fourth quarter, and then in the first quarter, we'll enter a technical recession. Moreover, what's really boosting activity so far in Japan is a lot of investment because we have the Olympics in 2020. So what the IMF has told Japan is in case you do see a deceleration in activity, you need to do fiscal stimulus to prop up investment as all of that Olympic spending starts to trickle down to support the economy into 2020 and into 2021. It's not going to be as significant as the pre-Olympic spending package, but it should help to sort of then bottom out the economy and to return Japan into growth in the second quarter of 2020.
Now, the question I have is also between Japan and Korea. They are both economies which are vulnerable to a slowdown, right, in this global trade. But then why do they persist in their trade spat? I mean, it's like there's no love lost, admittedly, between the two countries. So is there any resolution in sight?
So no love lost for sure. it's basically a political issue. They've removed Korea from the whitelist, which means that all companies exporting certain types of high-tech electronics components need to apply for permission. And so far, our understanding is that it does take place. Like they still export, but with some delays, which of course is never good for the cash flow risk of a lot of the companies. So we have seen an increase in cash flow risks in the ICT sector in Korea as a result. Both countries are going to struggle because they are big exporting countries and global demand is falling. But however, you know, in Japan, you have elections in 2021. It's a political line that sells in Japan. So we don't necessarily see a resolution taking place unless the economy does deteriorate significantly.
So things have to get really, really bad before they
get better. Correct.
Okay. So Carlos, in the little time that we have left, let's quickly cover one of the economic bright spots in the region, one of the few. Taiwan has surprised markets by growing their economy 2.9% in the last quarter, stronger than their government's August forecast forecast of 2.67%. Now, what are your thoughts on this here? Is this one country that is actually benefiting from the so-called substitution effect of the trade war?
So correct. There's a short-term substitution effect, and Malaysia, Taiwan, Thailand and Vietnam are both benefiting from higher exports to the US, but remember that demand overall for the rest of the countries is slowing. So there is some degree of benefit. That very strong Q3 outturn is a very stark contrast to Hong Kong, where one was minus or negative 2.9, the other one was positive 2.9, is predominantly reflecting higher government spending because we have elections in Taiwan next year. I would have liked to see a stronger contribution of gross fixed capital formation, so investments. But unfortunately, we will not see that until later in the year. A lot of the times when you have companies like Foxconn shifting some of their operations out of Shenzhen into parts of the south of Taiwan for cost reasons, just because wages have sort of equalized between the two regions. That will translate into higher economic activity, but it does take a little bit of time to set up the infrastructure and the factory in place. So we are seeing better performance on the back of government spending, and going forwards, we will see better performance on the back of higher investments as some of the supply chain shifts into Taiwan.
Well, thank you very much for your insight and for joining us this morning, Carlos.
Thanks so much.
That was Carlos Casanova, Chief Asia Economist with COFAS. And right now we're heading into a few messages, but then we'll be back to take a look at some local stories for you. So stay tuned here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.